Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Steve Graywall, the Education Department's Chief Information Security Officer. Now, Steve, this is kind of a special edition for Ask the CIO. This is going to be part of a two-part series. This is our interview, and then we're going to do the online chat later this morning at 11 o'clock on Thursday. First of all, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with some basics. We're going to talk a lot about security, cybersecurity, your security operations center. Sometimes I feel like the only time we get to talk about this is in October during Cybersecurity Awareness Month, so it's nice to get out of that usual October time frame. But you guys hit a milestone recently, which we're going to spend some time on, but let's start with the big broad picture. What is the status of cybersecurity at the Education Department?
We've done a phenomenal amount of work over the last 24 months. One of our major initiatives that we just achieved a milestone for is an enterprise cyber operational capability is what we're referring to, and an on-premise SOC is a key component of that. But that capability is really enabling us to continuously monitor the defense of all of our IT assets, our information spread across numerous service providers over the course of many systems and many services.
So was this, from an enterprise security operations center perspective, this is something new for you guys because you didn't necessarily always have this in the past, at least on-premise. That's the new part.
That is correct. So historically, the department was serviced by another federal agency via an interagency agreement. It was more of an MSSP arrangement. We were with that agency for several years, and as a best practice, we performed an analysis of alternatives. And based on that, we felt that we could expand our services, reduce cost, and also better position the department to take advantage of really the fundamental shift to IT outsourcing and cloud computing. And what I mean by that is, as we see this adoption of cloud computing, we are going to see the number of service providers increase, yet the government agencies are accountable for a lot of our FISMA compliance and things we do. So our focus has been standing up this IVNV capability, which will continue to give us the visibility we need and implement the accountability controls to ensure that practices and policies do align.
We definitely want to talk about the Security Operations Center. In fact, we'll spend a lot of time on that. But let's talk a little bit about the enterprise security capabilities and some of the initiatives that maybe fall under that. I can think of a few: CDM, HSPD-12, TIC. So tell us where you're at maybe on some of those priorities.
There's a series of things. The CDM is obviously a major cross-government initiative. OMB Memo 14-03 was released not too long ago, as I'm sure most folks are aware. We've been full force in implementation mode since fiscal year 12 for the core capabilities under CDM. So having that enterprise level visibility for asset configuration, vulnerability data. So we've implemented a tool set to address that. That obviously has a direct relationship with the risk management framework, which we've also developed. The risk management framework is really, along with CDM, going to get us to the dynamic compliance model, which you hear a lot about, shifting from the static model. So the tools, the technology, along with the procedural aspects, will really get us to the more dynamic risk-based model versus the one-size-fits-all model.
Let me jump in real quick on the risk management framework, because I think that's, you hear a lot about risk when it comes to cyber. Can you just kind of give us a high-level view of what that includes from a framework perspective?
It involves everything from our mission priorities, the controls that are the most relevant for those mission priorities. How do we automate those controls? How do we gain and sustain visibility into those controls? And then really make decisions based on risk versus what I'm sure you're familiar with, the traditional CNA model, where really the FIPS rating drives everything. So this is going to, you know, give us more agility, more flexibility with the trend of consumerization, you know, new technologies entering the marketplace. This is going to give us a platform for, you know, having the data we need in an expedient fashion and having the right people make the decisions.
And I imagine during this whole process, you said the last few years, everything is being modeled after what we're seeing now from the Homeland Security Department, their CDM contract. I imagine some of the tools are very similar. Are you guys kind of in lockstep with that Homeland Security effort?
Absolutely. We've been closely coordinating with DHS, FNR, on their CDM BPA. We did award a task order under our COCO contract, which is with Dell Services Federal Government, for what DHS refers to as Task Order 1. However, we're working closely with them for the activities and new capabilities in the out years.
And I know that they're getting ready for the award under the dashboard contract, which sounds like your risk management framework a little bit, so I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about there. CDM is one priority. Give us a sense of some of your other ones that you're working on as part of this larger enterprise cyber capability effort.
The other major initiative for this fiscal year for us is really under the TIC umbrella, as far as the TIC capabilities go, is the implementation of web application firewalls. These days, given the explosion of web applications, web services, the most common attacks that we've seen and from an incident perspective have been SQL injection, cross-site scripting, and this is really going to give us the proactive infrastructure to intercept those things and put the right controls in place so we're better protected from a departmental perspective.
And then obviously the two-factor authentication and several CIOs I've talked with over the past have told me that OMB has given them new percentages, new goals for around HSPD-12, the use of smart card for logical access. You guys are down that path as well, I imagine.
HSPD-12 being one of the cross-agency priority goals, we are very focused on that. As most departments and agencies, we've achieved compliance at the domain authentication level. So think of it as the first line of defense, using your PIV card to gain access to your PC, the network access component. The next phase, really, which we're focusing on now, is two-factor enablement of our mission application portfolio, which is a bit more challenging given some of the legacy architectures we're working with. But that the focus for us remains. We've done three pilots, and now we're moving out into production rollout of two-factor enablement of mission apps.
All right. A lot going on there. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into the Security Operations Center and some of those other capabilities. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Steve Graywall, the Education Department's Chief Information Security Officer.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio 1500.
Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Steve Graywall, the Education Department's Chief Information Security Officer. Now, Steve, before break, we're talking a lot about your priorities around cybersecurity, the idea of this enterprise capability that you guys are implementing. You had a couple other priorities that more of the network at the enterprise level. Just give me a sense of what those priorities are.
The two other major, what I'll call enterprise level infrastructure enhancements include a network admission control solution, a NAC solution that we're rolling out both for external and internal access is a major enhancement that's planned for this fiscal year. And then also a data loss prevention solution, again, which is more focused on information governance, policy-based controls for data flowing inbound and outbound in the environment. So those are two other big initiatives that are really going to strengthen the posture and give us some more policy-based control over how we do things around information and then also device-level authentication.
We hear a lot about the data prevention loss control. And I know you're not talking about encryption of hard drives per se, but what I'm guessing here, and maybe you could offer a little more into it, is the idea of roles and responsibilities. Does Steve Graywall have access to this data? And if so, what kind of access does he have? Is that right, the authentication authorization piece?
Yeah, so from a NAC perspective, yes, we do user-based authentication. We do role-based authentication. The NAC solution is really going to give us that type of capability at the device, equipment, hardware level. That's been an ongoing issue for some time, and I think that's going to, once you combine the user and then the device component together, it eliminates one risk variable. On the data loss prevention piece, absolutely. There is a tie back to role-based access in terms of looking at the information, what information should you have access to, how is that information traversing across the environment based on policies. Another simple example, which may shed some light on the DLP front, is a lot of people circulate inadvertently PII via email. So with this data loss prevention solution, it's a collaborative project between us or counsel's office and other stakeholders across the department, where we're really kind of defining the boundaries and the rules of what information traverses is across the environment, how it traverses, and what have you, hoping that we can get a better handle on any type of data leakage and a better handle on our information flow in general.
I'm hearing that more and more across the government, people taking this very similar approach to what you're saying. I'll call it the Edward Snowden effect. But let's get into some other things that you are going to talk about, which is your Security Operations Center. Now, this is a major change for education in many ways in terms of how you guys are going to do cybersecurity. Let's talk a little bit about the reason why you decided to go down this path of this enterprise on-premise Security Operations Center. Just give us a little bit of the background.
I think I briefly touched on earlier that given the evolution of cloud computing, given the cloud-first policy by OMB, we've started to experience this, and it will continue over the next several years. We're moving to more of an outsourced model. We're moving to off-premise installations. You know, we're moving to a portfolio of service providers, downstream service providers. So while from a security operations perspective, these providers have the day-to-day ops responsibility, we're still accountable. So the concept of operations and working with these folks can vary. You know, in some cases we have full transparency. In some cases it's process integration. In some cases it's management via SLAs. But in terms of a independent validation verification mechanism to ensure that their practices, their operational practices are aligned with our policies, we are able to gain that visibility via the enterprise operational capability and the SOC being a key component of that. So, for example, the Department of Education is one of the early adopters for a COCO model. We've been with the formerly Perot, now Dell Services federal government since 2007. We're in year 7 of that contract, have a lot of experience around oversight and governance. And so while those services, as an example, for security operations under, let's just say, commodity IT or core IT infrastructure services, you know, Dell's performing execution, we are now able to gain visibility and really, as from a checks and balances perspective, ensure that the things that they should be doing, they are doing. And in cases where we have challenges, we're able to bring that data back for expedient remediation. And we think that model will continue. Again, there's a lot of definitions of cloud, but just for the purposes of this conversation, if you think of traditional COCO versus dedicated hosting versus a multi-tenant model, in all of those scenarios, we feel there is value in having an independent validation and verification arm, which can provide assurances that the things that, you know, either are mandated contractually or handled operationally are truly being done. And we've been very, very successful at that thus far.
Two clarifications. You're using the term, I think it's GOCO, or is it COCO, the contractor-operated, contractor-owned, or is it government-owned, contractor-operated? Let's clear up that up.
The Dell Educate contract that I referenced is actually a COCO, a contractor-owned, contractor-operated. And that's the contract that I mentioned has been utilized for the last 7 or so years for all of our core IT services.
And then the other piece of this that I'm hearing is a lot of agencies, or OMB specifically, are saying you got to go through FedRAMP any cloud services. And then once you get that initial joint authorization provisional authority, the contractor does, then it's up to the agency to look at all the documentation and make a decision. And even after they make a decision, let's say you hire company X and they've been through FedRAMP and all is good and you start, it sounds like what you're doing now is the IVMV part, as you described it, is how do we ensure that they stay at that level of FedRAMP that they are at and not slip, or as security changes, and we know it always does, they're keeping up to date with the latest and greatest security. That's what it sounds like to me. Do I have that right?
Yes. Yeah. So we've absolutely leveraged FedRAMP. The whole shared compliance model makes sense. You know, it reduces level of effort. The department or agency is still on the hook to make a risk-based decision using that information. We've done that. But you're absolutely right on that. You know, even though under the FedRAMP program you have monthly reporting of metrics and what have you, given how dynamic just the pace of changes, we feel that if we have this capability, which is able to either, you know, give us data feeds or provide monitoring of the infrastructure from an independent perspective, that it really helps us ensure that the environment is secure and it does have the right control implementation in place.
It's almost like you're adding a layer of oversight that's maybe I don't hear a lot about. So give me a sense, how did you put that layer of oversight in? And I'm going to use oversight in a good way, not a bad way.
One of the key contributing factors was are two things I think I'll mention. One, first and foremost, our experience with the COCO model. Given that we're in year seven of this contract, we've learned a lot in terms of, more specifically, cybersecurity information assurance. You know, what are the key dependencies? What are the key requirements? How does that impact COCO? And, you know, COCO, just use the general frame of IT outsourcing and how that's kind of dovetailing with cloud computing. I think that's been a contributing factor in terms of why we felt this capability was critical. And the second piece is, you know, given the fundamental shift and the shift that's going to continue over the next, you know, several years, we feel that this capability will also add the same value to other arrangements where either it's multi-tenant cloud, it's dedicated hosting, whatever the case may be, because we do have, you know, processes in place, we have checks and balances, but sometimes when you outsource IT, it can become a black box. And the black box model is really a competing theme for ensuring the right protections are in place.
So when you made the decision to bring the Security Operations Center in-house, what was the first steps did you take? Was it a matter of deciding, okay, we need certain what? Hardware, software? We need certain SLAs with Dell services? Walk me through a little bit of the thinking of how to get from point A to point B to maybe where we're at now.
It was all the above. It was looking at the entire arrangement from a people, process, technology perspective. It was looking at our current arrangement, you know, the services we were receiving, you know, against the requirements we had. It was looking at tools and capabilities, you know, what were we licensed for, what we needed to acquire. It was looking at the facilities component. Given the sensitive nature of this initiative, we also had to plan for a facility. So, you know, based on all that data we collected, we formulated a transition plan which would really help us get to the initial operating capability. And the IOC was really the core set of capabilities that we felt we had to have in place before, you know, we were operational. And we did achieve that milestone in, you know, in last fiscal year 13, where we awarded the contract for vendor support for that. We've stood up the core capabilities. We have those data feeds, and we are operational.
All right, I want to jump back into a little more about what goes into the Security Operations Center. But first, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Steve Graywall, the Education Department's Chief Information Security Officer.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also,
that bid protest on the DoD contract.
Right, but did you know
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about
OMB's digital strategy?
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Steve Graywall, the Education Department's Chief Information Security Officer. Now, Steve, before break, you were talking about the Security Operations Center and the fact is that you guys did hit initial operating capability in 2013. What kind of services, what kind of functionality did IOC include?
The core services under IOC included intrusion detection and prevention services, your you know, standard IPS, IDS services, operating system and network device vulnerability, scanning. That's a major component that we felt was non-negotiable for IOC. Web application scanning, incident handling across the board for the department, you know, being equipped from a people and process perspective to handle incident handling, initial capability for cyber forensics, and finally, data collection and analysis. You know, we talked about CDM earlier, really being able to get that visibility via those data feeds using our tool sets. That was the scope of IOC in a nutshell.
How did you decide on these seven different capabilities? Because I'm sure there could be 100 that you could say, oh, I want all of them. How did you decide those seven were most important?
It was really based on requirements, based on our needs and based on requirements. We looked at, I think I mentioned earlier, we looked at the services that were being provided via the MSSP arrangement. But really, the key tools in our toolbox from a operational capability SOC perspective that we felt, without having these tools, these capabilities live, we would not be able to do this. So it was more based on needs, requirements across the enterprise.
How much did your risk management framework come into play when you're making these decisions about which capabilities came under IOC, or was the risk management framework in development as part of this entire process, so maybe it didn't come into play at all?
The risk management framework was actually under development in fiscal year 13, so when a lot of this work was being done, the implementation of the RMF was not there. However, we were still, you know, based on the data we had, based on our internal risk assessment processes, we were still making those decisions on capabilities and what have you.
How much for the IOC did you have to buy? Did you have to buy a ton of tools? Did you already have some in-house? Was there a huge cost to get this IOC capability going?
So from a software licensing perspective, we had the tools. However, we had to do infrastructure stand-up to support these tools and services. So more of the hosting piece, more of the installation piece in some cases. So it was a combination. There was cost. So it was really more of a migration and a stand-up of the underlying infrastructure to support these capabilities, considering we actually owned most of the licensing.
And I think a lot of times agencies spend a lot of money on that licensing, and then it never gets used, or B, it gets used in such a small way that there's a ton of money. Did you guys, as you were looking at the tool sets you had, find that, oh, I didn't realize I had that tool set. That'd be great for this IOC capability. Did you guys find that time and again?
We actually had a comprehensive understanding of the tool sets that were in play for us. And you know, when we were going through that analysis, we looked at everything in our enterprise security architecture, which is essentially a blueprint that covers all of our tools and capabilities. So we actually had a good understanding, and there was no major surprises during that assessment.
One question that just kind of comes to mind is, if you were outsourcing a lot of the security operations center, did you have these tools for other reasons? Like when that decision was made to spend money on these tools, but it was already being outsourced somewhere else, how does that work? Because I think a lot of people may be scratching their heads and say, well, there's always going to be an upfront cost if everything's been outsourced previously.
As we started engaging in discussions with our MSSP at the time, the federal agency that was servicing us, most of the tools that were being utilized by the MSSP were licensed under the Department of Education. So as we disentangled, as we transitioned away, we were able to bring those tools with us from a software licensing perspective. As I mentioned earlier, we still had to do, you know, stand up the underlying infrastructure to support them, but that's really how we were able to offset costs.
I think that's an incredible, there's some luck there maybe some planning. We'll give you guys more credit than luck, but I think that the upfront cost for so many people can be those tools, so that was a huge benefit. Let's move over to full operating capability. What's your timeline around that? What other kind of capabilities do you expect to have in place?
Based on our roadmap, we will be achieving a full operating capability, FOC, in fiscal year 15. That really entails additional sensor placement, so the additional IDS IPS sensors across other environments, as well as some of our web services providers that are dispersed across the country. It also includes a more robust, a more enhanced forensics capability, and finally, analytics. I think across the federal government, you know, we do a good job with data collection, but the rubber really meets the road in terms of looking at the right data, being able to slice and dice it, and reacting to it. So the underlying analysis capabilities is a big component of the full operating capability. We're looking forward to that.
What's the investment for full operational capability? You already own some of the tools as well, but it's a process by which you go A, B, C. Or is there some investment there that you guys are going to have to do for the FOC?
We will be doing some investment. We've been performing market research, looking at the various tool sets and capabilities across the industry. So, you know, the market research is underway. It's a TBD at this stage, but we're fully anticipating that, you know, for the next phase, essentially, the analysis and the underlying infrastructure and software tool sets to cover that will result in an additional investment.
All right. So when the vendors start calling, please don't blame me. I always tell that to my subjects when they talk about anything that could be acquisition related. Initial operating capabilities in place now. You guys are obviously seeing benefits. I think the two things people are going to want to know is, how much better is your security? Can you measure that? And two, is there a cost savings that you're seeing right now?
Based on what we're spending historically versus what we're spending now with the IOC, we have experienced, you know, a 20%+ savings in cost. And from a benefits perspective, there's a series of things. We have far greater visibility into the department's information and the IT assets. We're postured and positioned to respond in a more expedient fashion to incidents. We are now really able to control our own destiny. And finally, I've mentioned this a couple times, but I think it's an important point to highlight, the accountability control, the ability to do verification and validation against service provider practices is a tremendous benefit that will continue to reap the benefits of.
The cost savings, is it cost savings because you brought it in-house? Are you able to pinpoint maybe a little bit where the cost savings are coming from?
Most of the efficiencies were a result of level of effort, labor, and FTE. As we discussed earlier, the tool costs, the infrastructure costs are pretty black and white, but we're able to really, most of our cost savings were on the people front.
And let's talk about the people front for a second. It's a workforce issue. Cybersecurity workers are hard to find. The training of them takes time. It's not like a network administrator who can take a couple classes and be ready to go. How are you guys doing with the workforce issue? Are you able to get the people you need to man the center, to provide the analysis, to do the things you need to get done?
That definitely is the biggest challenge. I mean, getting the right people that have the talent, that have the skill sets, is the biggest challenge for us. We have been relatively successful in terms of vendor support in that area. However, we continue to reevaluate that. We do have some flexibility with our partners and contract vendors to continue to refresh skill sets and do training. We're also doing training, obviously, for our federal resources, but that is an ongoing challenge that we continue to experience.
Did you guys have a huge uptick in terms of FTEs? And when I say huge, I meant like, you know, two or three, because in this day of hiring freezes and early outs, there's not a lot of people, agencies that are hiring, but cyber is one of those areas that I think is always open to more people, more help, more ability to do work.
We did bring the branch chief of cyber operations on board to run the entire effort, so not much on the federal front in terms of resources.
All right, very nice. Now, we're almost out of time before I let you go. People who are listening to this conversation may be saying to themselves, well, that was great for them. They were able to do it, but I'm different. I could never in-source a security operations center. So let's talk a little bit about advice that you would give maybe some other CISOs, other CIOs who are either maybe just beginning to do this or thinking about insourcing a security operations center, because I think the model as you presented it with kind of that IVMV piece looking at cloud service providers, I think it's somewhere that it's going to be a trend that maybe you're on the front end of.
You know, we've come a long way in the last 2 years. Significant changes have led to transformation, not to mention the tough budget climate. But I would say one of the critical success factors is leadership buy-in. At the Department of Education, the Secretary, the Deputy Secretary, and the CIO have all been very supportive of information assurance and cybersecurity. So without leadership buy-in, you're really going to face a lot of obstacles. So I would say that is the most critical at the most senior levels downstream, having that buy-in and support. Also, as we continue to implement the CDM initiative, some of the other CAP goals, I think operational alignment is key. And let me say a little bit more about that. What I mean by that is a lot of the focus around automation, near real-time visibility is around technical controls. And successful implementation of technical controls really requires alignment and synchronization with the various ops organizations. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to succeed. You're going to be going backwards. So, you know, the federal shift to the near real-time dynamic model, operational alignment, I would say, is a critical, critical success factor.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this part of the interview. Please stay tuned as Steve is going to join us on federalnewsradio.com for a half hour long online chat. Again, you can go to federalnewsradio.com. You'll see it right on top of the homepage, and you can tune in and ask Steve questions of your own. You don't have to listen to me ask questions anymore. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, my special guest today. My special guest for the next half hour will continue to be Steve Graywall, the Education Department's Chief Information Security Officer. Steve, thanks for the interview, and thanks for sticking around for the online chat.
Thank you very much for having me. This was a great experience.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.